if it's not Scotty, it's Wyndham.
Well,
and
that,
so if you get kind of this, you know, back and forth where you're like, hey, all right, maybe you're a Scotty guy, maybe you're a Wyndham guy, or maybe you hate them both and you hope somebody else sneaks in there. But either way, you know, at least it's reason to watch, I think.
What is up, everybody? How you living? No putts given. Tony and Chris, we're back. Golf Spy T, Golf Spy C. Tony, is that a new Puma hat?
It's a very old Puma hat.
Like circa...
I couldn't tell you.
2015.
Like you can go back to like this. This one's been on No Putts Given over the years several times. I was like, yeah, let's just ran into the closet, pulled one out of a box because I'm getting to be at that, need a haircut. Plus the, as you know, the lights shine off my bald ass head. So do what we can.
We do what we can. We do what we can. Well, today we're talking dress code. We're talking the players. Tony, look, I wasn't there. My daughter was there.
I was going to say, my daughter wears shirts and sweatshirts from places she's never been and things she's never done all the time.
No, this is the opposite.
That is the fashion now.
She was there. I'll tell you about that in a minute. We'll talk to players. Little tour of HQ. We have some things going on in the land of the Yorktown, Virginia. And then a smattering of other golfing news. Tigers in the Bahamas playing golf with... ... So, my word. Not a ton of new equipment stuff, but still plenty to talk about. So let's start with the players. The fifth major, Tony. It's not the fifth major.
I mean, it kind of delivered like one, right?
It did. I mean, the leaderboard? Yeah, I mean, the finish was unbelievable. Sunday was great. I watched, you know, as much as I could on the other... 3 days. Max Honma almost killed a guy. We'll talk about that as well. But yeah, the story has to be Scheffler, doesn't it? Is that your, I mean, that's got to be the number one story.
I mean, two tournaments in a row, back-to-back players championships, never done before. So, I mean, it's just, guy's on an absolute heater. You know, we said last week, right? If he actually has figured out the putting, he's going to be a problem for everybody else. And maybe he has.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, you know, everybody says his ball striking is phenomenal. And it is. Even players that play, you know, to me, that's one of the, I guess, the subjective metrics that I really like to listen to is when other players stop and go, man, it's like the guy's on autopilot. Or, you know, back in the day when Henrik Stenson would, you know, working on irons on the driving range and stuff, and people would stop and go, you know, it's just a different sound, right? When your peers are saying that you're a step ahead of everybody else, that's a little bit scary. So if this is the case, here's my question for you though. So I don't care what tour you watch. I don't care how often you watch golf or how little. It's clear who the number one player in the world is right now. By any metric, by anything, it's Scottie Scheffler. So is this good for golf? Do we need a Scottie Scheffler figure headed into major season stuff where you have a clear run? He is a dominant number one. I'm just going to say that. He is the number one player in the world. Is that good for golf right now, do you think?
I think so. It's hard to say for sure because over the course of, you know, the time I've been watching golf, which certainly doesn't, and barely watching as the case may be, but, you know, in those years, you know, call me a child, if you will, of the Tiger Woods era, where there was an unquestionable number one dominant player that, you know, whether you liked Tiger or didn't, kind of tune in to watch just to see what he would do. And mm-hmm. You know, I don't think anybody is ready to say that Scottie Scheffler brings that Tiger excitement factor, but certainly I think it helps to have one guy versus, you know, okay, maybe this week it's going to be one of eight guys that we kind of sort of loosely watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I think better. I mean, kind of,
I said,
right, if he would just be an average putter, he'd be dangerous, and that's kind of what he did at the Players. So yeah, it's just, it seems like maybe, just maybe, he could be the guy. And better yet, if we see in small sample size, right? But it's sort of, you've been watching the tour lately. It's if it's not Scotty, it's Wyndham.
Well,
and
that,
so
I'm
if you get kind of this, you know, back and forth where you're like, hey, all right, maybe you're a Scotty guy, maybe you're a Wyndham guy, or maybe you hate them both and you hope somebody else sneaks in there. But either way, you know, at least it's reason to watch, I think.
Yeah,
more than there has been.
I think it's great. I love it because I think when you have a dominant number one, it just sets a different dynamic and tone for the tournament because it's like, hey, can somebody challenge this person? We all know going in, I mean, odds on favorite, unless something bizarre happens, Scheffler's going to be odds on favorite at the Masters. You could convince me that there's a reason to discuss a Grand Slam. He could win all four of them this year. And the reason I say that is, yeah, your putter has to get hot if you can find consistency there. But like, tee to green is kind of like defense. You know, defense travels. Defense does well in the playoffs. Defense keeps you in the game. It gives you an opportunity to win. And that is his absolute strength. I don't see that going away. So I love it. I like it because then people kind of have to choose a little bit. Hey, Scheffler or not. If there's a dominant, you got to have an opinion on them one way or the other. So I like it. I like it. I think it's great. Yeah, we're going to get to see, you know, again, you got Rahm, DJ, Cam Smith, you know, Joaquin Niemann, the world's greatest complainer.
Wild. Like, you kind of have to take the live guys out of the conversation a little bit right now.
Sure.
But how quickly it feels like, and I know if you can look back and go, like, this was a slow grind to get here, but just it feels like all of a sudden, right, it's the PGA Tour, it's Scotty's Tour, it's Wyndham Tour. We're not talking as much about Rory, at least on the course, right? Getting a lot of headlines for conversations around LIV and the tour and things like that, but on course, mm-hmm. not as mm-hmm. much. Justin Thomas, not as much, certainly it's lately. It has been sort of this changing of the guard.
Yeah.
And it just seems very noticeable. You know, maybe go back to the US Open where Wyndham Clark was like, hi guys, you know, but yeah, it's different tour.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's better or worse, but it's, I think there has to be something that helps move past Tiger. I know he's still playing, but I think we all agree the best days are behind us. The chances of another major are remote. And so, it's,
yeah,
you know,
this may make me more unpopular than I already am, but Tiger, last six events he's played in, whatever, three WDs, hasn't finished, hasn't really seriously been a part of, you know, the leaderboard in any type of meaningful fashion. I don't see Tiger factoring into the leaderboard in any tournament he plays this year. And it's not because...
Fighting words, man. Fighting words.
I know. It's not because he's not talented. He says, you know, hey, I can hit the shots. I can still hit golf balls. I can do all those things. Well, the one thing he's not doing is playing competitively. And he says that in every press conference. Hey, you know, you got to knock some of the rust off. Hey, get more reps. You know, work on this. Competitive golf is different. It is different. And even for somebody who is, in my opinion, the greatest golfer of all time, I didn't grow up during Jack's era, however, he doesn't get those reps consistently. And so he's always going to be coming off a 4, 5, 6 week break or whatever the case is. So that's when you see the Wyndham Clarks, the Scottie Schefflers, you know, Rory, when he gets back in form, and there's a handful of other guys in every big tournament major, you got to beat all those guys.
Yeah, and it's tough. Happening. I mean, a 4-day hike through Augusta National
is, it ain't happening.
That's sorry, tough ask.
Ain't happening. How scared were you when you saw that video of Max Honma almost?
I mean, it's a miracle that it hasn't happened and you haven't seen. I mean, I know guys get bonked from time to time with wayward drives,
but we're talking like, you know, golfers going to hit a shot, And you got people that, you know, want to be so desperate. They're so desperate. They want to see everything that possibly. So they're lined like this corridor.
Somebody will get killed. Seems like an inevitability at this point. So
let me ask you. So
it's not for dumb luck, honestly.
Yeah. Let's say it didn't hit that tree. Let's say it did hit a person and seriously injure them.
Seriously kill
them. I'm not trying to make light of people getting injured by hitting. I actually had a friend who got hit. Total random freak accident at the driving range. Got hit in the eye. Blind. Rest of their life. It can happen. Whose fault is it? That happens. It's going to happen.
It's the fault of the tournament organizers, I think. And look, I'm not trying to remove any part of the blame for what amounts to, quite frankly, a little bit of stupidity on the part of the spectators. I mean, as we've discussed, as people yell at me for from time to time in the comments, I don't watch a ton of golf. Seen a lot of shanks in my day. Right. And I've certainly with social media.
I've produced several of them.
Yeah. That's not even counting the ones I've done myself. Right. I saw the video and we see this every time where you have one of those shots where who's ever in charge of safety, right? Who's ever deciding where those crowds get to stand is allowing an exceptionally narrow corridor. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't take much for something. I mean, comes out a little low, a little right, something like that. Or,
Somebody spooks them in their backswing. They hit, like, my God. There are so many little things that can go wrong. Because most of the time when this is happening, you know, a lot of times they're hitting a recovery shot or something. We're not talking about on the tee in the middle of the fairway because the gallery wouldn't be there.
Oh, and that is, I mean, that's interesting, right? We're like, okay, look, if the ball's in the fairway, you stand where you always stand. If the ball is where you always stand, just continue to stand there, safety. But damned, it doesn't make any sense at all. Like, let's kind of... keep some sensible distance from the action instead of like, oh, let's, you know, this guy's really good. I trust that Max Homa is going to be able to hit this ball somewhere in the space that's the width of a bowling lane and everything is going to be fine. And, you know,
right.
Thankfully with these guys more often than not, it is, but man, but I wouldn't bet on it. Yeah. And it only takes once. Right. And then it's conversation and there are lawsuits and it's just one of those things to the point where, I almost wonder if there's a mindset, there's going to be some pros that are be like, I am not hitting this shot until everybody clears the way the hell out of the way. Because this is ridiculous.
Because I don't want it coming back on me because I'm the person hitting the shot. So I could see where if that happens, do tour players have personal liability insurance? Who knows? Just saw that and that was scary. But something that makes me happy, Tony, we're going to go to our good friends back at HQ for just a minute. I think Bennett's going to give us a little bit of a tour around our new facility. Things are coming along.
Exciting. Love it.
This is awesome. I'm excited to see it. So Bennett, take it away. Show us what's going on.
Thanks, Chris and Tony. I wanted to give you guys a backstage pass into our brand new facility. So what you see behind me, that is all ours. We are renting out that fourth unit, but it is a huge, huge comparison into what we've got now. So the 316 that we're in now is really just one of these. So, you know, you got your two standard hitting bays in the back, couple offices, couple couches, but now that's a completely different story. So come on inside. This is it. It's massive. We are so excited. We've got the framing up from Indoor Golf Shop. So what this is going to be is these garage doors are actually going to be behind some drywall, but we're going to have four bays all the way down here. This will be nice and open so that netting, you can see all the way through into the offices. Right in here, this is the fun part for us. We're going to have a big team office in here. It's a little dark in here. So two big conference tables, and then right behind me, you see these four enclosures. Those are all going to be booths. So kind of a collaborative working space. Two of them are going to be soundproof, so if we need to take calls or meetings, we can still feel like we're a part of the office, but definitely have that privacy if we need it. Ooh, and then this is essential. Fourth hitting bay over here. And then this is our massive storage unit. So as far as testing goes, that obviously comes with a lot of products. So we need to have ample storage. We've already got a couple storage units offsite, but this allows us to have everything in here. So poor John Howard, it's going to be an organized mess and chaos in there, but that's his world and we're just living in it. So over here, Connor's gonna love this, where these guys are doing their lighting work. This is gonna be Connor's area. So all of the soft good testing is gonna go on over here. We're gonna have a nice cool bar top over here so we can at least have our lunches, kind of congregate. It's our water cooler, if you will, and kind of see what Connor does over here in his space. So all of that, you know, shoes, bags, gloves, those will all be kind of stored up here so he can just have his area and be nice and organized. Now, this is the coolest part. You guys are gonna love this. So PuttView is coming all the way from Germany. They're going to install a full custom putting green that's going to allow us to really give you guys the best data for all of our putter testing and, better yet, even do more labs. So for putters, things like kind of understanding stroke type and really getting you guys that information that you need and are looking for that we weren't able to do in our previous facility without the overhead topography and other amazing features that PuttView has. But that's it, we're super excited. We're not too sure about a timeline yet, but it should be wrapping up within the next month. All right guys, I'm gonna head back over to our office that's actually functional right now, but I'm gonna toss it back to you guys. Peace out.
That's a lot of drywall. I see things coming together where the putting green is going. We got
not all the way there yet, but
it's coming together.
Putting, oh, that's gonna be so cool to have a. It's gonna be a big, big PuttView putting green in there as
it's
well as
real.
Double. Yeah, it's good stuff.
It's getting real. All right, Tony. Last week, published an article about the state of dress, like dress code stuff in the golf industry. I'm just going to start with this question right away. Does golf have a dress code problem?
You know, I'm so on the fence with this. I think professional golf, the PGA Tour, I think it's absolutely absurd that players can't wear shorts in 100 degree heat. Like I think I've mentioned before, right? Now with like professional soccer, they will stop a game and take a hydration break. But these guys are out in, you know, steaming heat and humidity in long pants for no other reason other than appearances. So I think that's ridiculous. Going to the other extreme where, you know, the country club at Brookline should allow people to play in mesh shorts and a t-shirt. I struggle with that kind of extreme as well. So I'm a little bit in the middle. I don't know what it's like where you play at TPC Colorado. At McGregor, we have on paper, right? The dress code is collared shirts tucked in. The tucked in is never enforced. The collared shirt is sometimes enforced from what I can tell. It's almost like who happens to be in the shop that day, or, you know, which members happen to see it and decide whether or not they have a problem with it.
My biggest issue with dress code stuff is this, is I did a little research. So let's say there's 40,000 courses across the world. And let's say that 16,000 plus or minus of those are in the U.S., of which 75% or so are public or daily fee, et cetera. The other quarter are private. If you're a private club, you make whatever rules you want to. Now, I can argue whether I personally think those rules are ridiculous or not. Like, I don't know, changing your shoes in the parking lot.
Yeah, that's the one where I'm like, this is just stupid. Like, just, so what why? Like, why? Why? Right.
It's the dress code rules that I go, there's...
If somebody has any idea on that, by the way, like, just from a no, there's a very good reason why you can't change your shoes in the parking lot. If anybody has any insight into that, please leave a comment because I do not get it. I just, you know, are you worried about ugly socks? Anyway, you were saying.
Yeah, it's that. And like, okay, where you can just kind of point out the hypocritical nature maybe of some of the rules. And it's like, okay, help me understand, like, again, what's the purpose? What are we trying to do? So just take the shoe one for, okay, let's say you had a club, they say, no, you cannot change your shoes in the parking lot. Okay, what if I just go back in my car where nobody's watching me and I just change shoes in my seat?
You're still technically in the parking lot. I believe in this case you need to stop your car immediately outside the gate, change your shoes there, and then get back in your car. Yeah, no.
And then drive in? That works? The other one that kind of gets me a little bit is the what constitutes appropriate golf attire. And it's like anytime you're going to draw a line on something, let's say it's clearly defined, like you said, like a collared shirt or something like that. So I go inside the pro shop and they're selling these fantastic hoodies. I love them. They look awesome.
Buy the hoodie, don't wear the hoodie here.
Can I buy the hoodie and go right out and start hitting balls in the practice facility? Or is it buy the apparel and go wear it somewhere else? So like, that's one of the things. It's like when they sell
you buy the hoodie, go wear that at the Muni. Show them where you've been, not where you are.
Right, so like when you sell something in a pro shop that directly violates your own dress code, I call BS on that one.
I would argue against that a little bit. If only for, why? Like, I'm happy to see more courses selling t-shirts. Like, if I'm laying around my house going for a walk downtown, whatever it happens to be, I don't want to put on a polo from, you know, PGA Frisco, for example. But, you know, if I got a t-shirt, right. I'm comfortable like that. That's how I live most of my life. So, you know, I'm all good being comfortable when I'm not just on my own time, but kind of out in public. I would, you know, the kind of the argument I would make is municipal courses where sort of the same ownership or operational structure as a public park.
Right.
And so, like, if you're telling me, like, in this public park, you can wear whatever you want, but in this public space that your tax dollars are somehow paying for in a lot of cases, you have to conform to this dress code. I would argue maybe at the municipal level it should be a little freer. And that, again, you talk to people who grew up playing municipal golf when they were kids, like that was the opportunity, right? Like that was where they could get on a golf course, play the game, learn the etiquette of the game beyond, you know, who cares what you're wearing if you're doing the rest of it right, honestly.
Yeah.
And so I just think to an extent dress codes can limit opportunities. But I also don't see them as purely evil in every case.
Well, and it's interesting, like you have this kind of push-pull relationship between maybe what's good for the masses or looking at a big picture. And like at an individual level, I don't care. If I go play golf at my home course where there is a dress code, whatever, and somebody showed it and they let them play, say, hey, they're wearing whatever. Personally,
I'm not going to be the guy that rats them out.
I don't care. I don't care if you're wearing your hat backwards. I don't care if you're playing in a t-shirt and joggers. I don't care. Whatever. As long as it doesn't, you know, that's the
play fast, respect the course.
Yeah. Like I said, at PXG, at Scottsdale National, right? Like, it's have fun and don't let your fun impinge on the fun of others. So, okay.
Yeah. If your fun is ruined by somebody wearing a t-shirt or not wearing pants you like, I don't know. Go look at a picture of a puppy. Do something to feel better.
That's one that's it's interesting too. Like, I almost feel like there's this hierarchy. You mentioned municipal golf courses, so we're talking city owned courses, whatever. Treat the same way you would the park where you take your kids to play or open space or whatever. I don't care. I think that should be whatever goes. And then it's almost like you have this contingency of like courses that take themselves seriously, maybe some that take themselves a little too seriously, and then like these uber elite courses, you often see stuff like wear whatever you want, we don't care. So go from blue collar, middle class, upper middle class.
I need almost like in a lot of cases, the guys at the high end of the middle are trying to prove something, right? Mm-hmm.
Millionaire, a million. I got to show you my stuff. Billionaires, do whatever the F you want. You know, like, we don't care. We're not trying, you know, so I don't know. It's just kind of, I guess it's kind of interesting. I personally don't care. I get it. Private institutions can do whatever they want. If you don't like a course because of its dress code, don't go play there. That's totally your call as well. There's plenty of other courses, but I do think, like you said, mentioned Brookline, that's a great one. We had a chance to play that a couple of years ago. If they have a dress code and I want to play Brookline, I'm going to adhere to their dress code. I am happy to do that, to have an opportunity, no matter what I think about the dress code, and I'm fine with it. I'm going to do whatever they want me to do to go play that course. I'm fine.
And I mean, we didn't go through the rules in complete detail there, but I didn't feel stuffy. Like, the only thing that may impact some people was like, hey, if you're going to use your cell phone, go to this designated area. Again, right. And that's more along the lines of respect other people on the course and don't scream into your phone for 18 holes, right? Which can sometimes happen. That's a little bit different. But again, so I'm good with anything that's, just, play fast. Don't hold me up too much. Respect the course and have a good time. Everything else is incidental nonsense, I think.
Exactly. So. Exactly. No, it's an interesting one. And I'm not going to pretend that golf stuff's cheap. I mean, everything feels like other stuff is getting expensive. So,
there are deals. It can be like, because we see polos, right? It's not uncommon for a new polo to come out. It's $110. Or, we've seen golf pants 160 plus for regular golf stuff. We talk about the shoe stuff, which you and I love. Yep. $400 rain pants. I think worth it, but you can't expect everybody's gonna pay for it or wants to, can, whatever you want to, however you want to describe it. But at the same time, I get emails all the time, constantly stuff on sale. I see weekly Adidas and Puma shorts for $25 to $35 because they're last year's colors. And you know what? Most times,
instead of elderberry or
Right. Last year's color is a hell of a lot like this year's color. Nobody's going to know the difference. And even if they do, I'm not going to be like, oh, look at that poor ass bastard wearing elderberry. But that elderberry. Elderberry is a 2022 color. You think he can, sneak his poor ass by me? No way, sir.
So outdated.
Yeah. I mean, and looking, and again, like, the Walter Hagen stuff at Dick's, which is, it's not a brand that rolls off the tongue. It certainly does not have the kind of the same. It's not a Holderness and Bourne, if you will, but at the same time, it's not terrible stuff. And I mean, I'm seeing some stuff on sale for like $16, and we're seeing these upstart brands come along as they are in the club space. These, call them DTC apparel brands. Ultimately, I think almost every apparel brand by some measure is a DTC brand.
Sure it is.
But you have these guys that are doing the same thing as like a club, a sub 70 or Tacoma is doing on the club side. We're like, hey, cool. You guys want to be way up here?
Right.
Just go down here and offer something that's pretty decent and affordable. And so, when you look at those options, I struggle with the argument of, well, it's just too expensive to buy golf clothes. Because I'm looking, and again, right? Lots of things, lots of price points, but kind of the t-shirts that I look at, if I can find a t-shirt for $30, it's kind of a bargain these days. And so, all things equal, it's not a stretch to say, go out and spend $55 on the apparel or, I guess you need belt. You can play in tennis shoes. Nobody's gonna come after you for that.
I'm gonna assume you already got a belt.
Just don't. Yeah, as long as you don't change them in the parking lot, you'll be fine.
Unless your name is Dan Owen and you're from the UK, you already have a belt ready to go. Hey, and if you're not sure where to find all these deals, hit up Connor. Find him. Connor.
Call him. Show up at his house. Knock on his door.
Yes, he will take you shopping. He would love to.
He'll take you to Ross like a boss.
To Ross. All right, a couple other things going on in the golf world. By the time this airs on Wednesday, it'll have been a couple days ago, and we'll have maybe more information. But some big confab going on that was kind of rumored over the weekend with, obviously the players. It's the home of the PGA Tour. Get kind of a State of the Union address, if you will, from Jay Monahan. But you have all the key players for the PGA Tour there. And it looks like there's a little thing going on in Nassau in the Bahamas with
El Tigre.
Mm-hmm. We're talking PIF money. Again, we're talking Saudi investment. We're talking a meeting between this new Players Council Advisory Board, people like Tiger. Right, people like Peter Malnati, people that are on the board, Jordan Spieth, etc., meeting with the Saudi contingent face to face to do what, Tony? What do you think they're talking about?
I mean, right? Are we going to merge? Are we not going to merge? Are we still playing this game? We already missed the deadline, or pushed the deadline, or whatever they did. I don't know. I feel like with the new investment that the PGA Tour got, like, is there any point in trying to secure additional investment with the Saudis? I guess. I mean, I think the whole plan, right, is just to make everybody rich, screw the fans, and that's fine. seems to be where they're headed, but I'm not sold anything's going to come of it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think my sense is that this is the pitch, if you will. So, I mean, we're talking about the PIF boss, Yasser, who, you know, has the keys to the bank, to the vault. And I think this is his opportunity to say, here's what our vision is, here's what we want, and here's what we need to get this across the finish line. And this is what we're going to... So I think they're going to talk stuff like, hey, players coming back to or having access to PGA Tour events, what they want on their side. Some have said, I think I'm okay in saying this, or I think Rory said something, they can come back with basically without any or very, very minimal penalty. You've had other players go, hell no. You left, you're gone. Scotty Scheffler said it last year, like, hey, if you're frustrated about the division in golf, look at the people that left. They're the ones that divided. So focus your anger there.
You could see, and I don't know who ultimately makes that decision, right? If it's a vote or it's just Jay doing Jay things, but mm-hmm. I have a hard time with everybody or a top 10 in the live rankings, however you determine those, right? I'm sure right. They can come up with their own system or just do whatever the hell they want. But,
mm-hmm.
And that's tough to allow anybody to come back without penalty, given that, you know, such a firm line was drawn in the sand. So,
right.
You know, to go back and go, hey, never mind it. That is kind of an F you to the guys who stayed. And there hasn't been any indication that's a problem for Jay Monahan, but it's just one of those things where if I stuck around, which again, admittedly a choice, but a choice made based on being told that leaving had consequences. And if you come back and say, right. Oh yeah, you know, the consequences, you should have gone because there were no consequences. That's right. A different conversation. And I'd be pissed about it. I wouldn't expect, or I think it's ridiculous that LIV guys are whining about world rankings because they had no guarantees they would get them. If you trusted Greg Norman, you deserve everything you got and less. I don't know. I'm still in the camp of probably nothing comes of it. Although it is a curiosity of, like, if it does, you know. How do you two tours? Because again, I continue to say that I've seen no evidence to suggest that there is enough fan interest to support two professional golf tours in terms of tuning in. And LIV works because they don't care if anybody watches. They don't need anybody to watch right now.
Right.
But if you get to the point where everything depends on viewership and ratings and sponsorships that come with that, There's just not enough interest in the world for two tours at that level.
Yeah, my last thought on this is, you know, anytime that there's two sides coming together to try to discuss or get an agreement made, you have to think about leverage and who has more leverage in a certain situation. I don't care if you're negotiating a car deal with the dealership or, you know, your extension on your SiriusXM subscription, right? Somebody has more leverage than somebody else, and it's how they use that leverage. Then in this case, I'm not so sure that the PGA Tour has the leverage that maybe they hope that they do. I think one, to the degree they want/need the money in investment, yeah, they have some now, no doubt that's there, but they don't have all the top players. If they want to get that back to what you're saying, Tony, which I totally agree, I feel like the PGA Tour maybe isn't in the strongest bargaining position, because legacy and tradition and history, those platitudes clearly only got you so far. And so it would be interesting to see how this goes.
Yeah, we're supposed to be done with it too, and like, here we go. It's going to drag on and drag on and drag on, and probably until both Jay Monahan and Greg Norman are gone. Maybe that's what it's going to take, is a kind of a full refresh on, or reset on both sides of it.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see. PXG, Ball Lab, came out this
Extreme!
Week.
Extreme!
We tested the ball last year. Give me the quick rundown. How did it do, and should anybody be interested in this ball?
Solidly on the low end of average range. You know, I classify it as average. We don't really distinguish between high and low. If you're in the range, that's what you are. So solidly average. It's interesting. I think this one's interesting for a couple reasons. One, the balls that we flagged as bad, and there were only three. But the ones which is, again, solidly average, it's right around what we typically find. So while three sounds bad, it's average, right? But the reason they were flagged bad in every case was inconsistent compression within the golf balls themselves. So we measure 3 points on a ball, and so imagine, like, hey, it's 100 in this point on this point, and it's only 93 in this one. And there are some reasons why that can happen. It can be tied to diameter. It can be something in the layer concentricity. It's hard to pinpoint sometimes exactly why. It's not something we see a lot.
We don't see that. I mean, we'll see variation in ball compression throughout a sample. Like, hey, this ball was 98 compression. Another ball was 92. This one was 95. This one was 87. But to take one ball and say, okay, depending on where we measure it,
It's a weird one. It's a weird one, and obviously it should go out without saying, but when we see that, we do retest, and in this case, we retested this particular sample three times above and beyond, and, you know, I will say, and this is actually the second batch we bought, to PXG's credit, and, it's easy to ding people or brands when things don't go right out of the gate.
Sure.
It happens a lot in the golf industry, where the first run of a product is not perfect. It's not what, when you're buying from a factory or working with a factory as PXG is, it's not what you were told you were getting.
Yeah.
And in some cases, as we've seen, there's some history there where you just kind of go, you know, hopefully nobody notices and we don't get caught and it's fine.
Right.
PXG's case,
start falling off.
PXG does some testing internally. They've got some cool tooling in addition to the robot testing they do. They do some pretty interesting and unique stuff. And they identified the problem pretty early, and so they addressed it with the factory, and so they came to us and said, hey, these first batches, we know about this. So we're like, cool, let's wait, and so we can test what people will actually be getting moving forward. And that's what we did. And again, like, pretty much average across the board, except for that compression thing, which, again, anomalous, hard to say exactly what it was. So in the grand scheme of things, I'm not super concerned about. It's nothing I would point to and go, do not play this ball because of this.
Right.
You know, we know a little bit about this ball, right? We know
it
comes from the same factory as the Kirkland, has the same aerodynamic package as the Kirkland, so you're going to see similar flight traits. But it's also a faster ball, higher compression. So it's going to feel a little firmer, but it's going to be faster. It doesn't spin quite as much, which is...
Though it is slightly
in my
higher
estimate, it's definitely a higher spinning ball, but it's not way, way up there like the Kirkland. Like I said, it's not... It's not
right.
way it's, beneath it, but it's not quite as spinny. And just, again, from those conversations with PXG, it's pretty clear to me that they, and again, we see it in the testing, knowing what we've seen from multiple generations of Kirkland.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is they have a higher stick quality standard, a higher quality expectation coming from that factory. And so, you know, if it's one or the other, and it's, you know, for most people, it's not going to be. You have guys that love the Kirkland brand, guys who love the PXG brand, but just based on the price point, you know, Kirkland at just under $20 a dozen, and PXG at $40.
I was going to say, at this price point,
they're not head-to-head competitors.
No, they're not head-to-head competitors at this price point, given what the testing results show. Are you buying this ball at that price point? Is this a go or a no-go for you at that price?
I mean, it's just a clear case of, like, it's average, right? So guess what? We talk about this all the time. Most things are average. So do I think you could do a little bit better at the price point? Again, I'll go to MaxFly, which right now is the same price point. Actually, they go on sale, bulk pricing, a lot of ways to get them for less. But that's an example that I would give as what I would classify as a higher quality ball at a similar price point. However, and this seems to get lost in all this conversation, right? Like, a Max Fly ball, the performance is fundamentally different than the PXG. It is a different performance spec. And so if you want a fast ball but with more spin, then yeah, you would maybe look at the PXG, because again, it's not the best quality ball in our database, but it's within the average range. So
if you're looking for a ball that, like I said, good ball speed, a little firmer on the higher spinning, higher launching side, if that is you, and they're
definitely higher spinning players, launch. Definitely higher spinning. I don't know about the launch. I think it's probably mid high.
Okay. So yeah,
I think the knock on the dimple pattern here is that it tends to launch low and fly high. So
it does kind of one of these things. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We saw it in the robot testing. It's as much as we were messing with our test engineer while we were there, when the PXG balls were in the air. I mean, it's by no means a short ball. Like, if you're looking for distance, it's going to hold its own for sure. So
yeah, like I said, average and above average in some areas, slightly below average in some others. Driver test came out. Just quick recap for people. Driver test is out. You can check that stuff out. We're working on disaggregating information by swing speed. We're going to chop up the results and present it to you in different formats. And then the next test coming out is mallet and blade putters.
Yeah, blade putters will be next, I think. I'm just crunching the numbers there, trying to get that hammered out. And so once I'm done with my end of things, Philip will crank that out pretty quickly, and it won't be long before we roll right into mallets. And then, as you said, at some point in the near future, we will, this year, bring back the swing speed.
Bring it back, baby. Bring it back. So. I love it. So, yeah, from here on, the end of testing season, we're going to have updated stuff rolling out all the time,
we just published stand bags at the end of last week, and Connor and the soft goods team, those will keep us busy. Everything from cart bags to golf shoes, push carts, range finders, rain gear, ball retrievers,
if
golfers buy it, we test it, really. So
yeah, I'll give you the quick rundown. If you need a new stand bag, get a Ping. If you need a new stand bag and you're really big on value, hit up Dick's Sporting Goods and look at the Max Fly Honors. If you're all about the luxury type component, it's Ghost Golf or maybe Vessel in there too. And there's your results.
No, go get nobody's them. Making fine mahogany stand bags, but leather's no, nothing leather's made not up bad.
Of rich mahogany.
Rich mahogany.
Well, as per usual, if you have questions, let us know. Please comment below and let us help you get more information. But until next time, we out.